We've got a great man in front of us today, Mr. Ronald Clark. His story is just fascinating, and I'd rather have him tell it because he says it so matter-of-factly and so eloquent. And he has his beautiful wife here, Dorothy. They have a story that's going to inspire us today. And the only thing I will say, starting off, is that, you know, you said that you had spent a lot of your time in drug addiction, and you were living under a bridge. When you see our brothers and sisters out on the street, you're looking at people who may have lost hope in life, but they're brilliant, and Absolutely. They just need somebody to help them unravel whatever's going on in their mind. You know what I'm saying? So we should never, ever give up on our Exactly. people when we Absolutely. See them in that condition, right?
Yeah, they're the, what we call the hidden gems.
What was it that actually started your addiction?
To break that stigma that people in addictions, they come from this poverty-stricken area or problems in their home or poor family. And that was not my story. Mm. My parents were great providers, were faith-based family. You knew where I was at every Wednesday night and on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
I mean, I was very active in the church. I had all those things. Academically, you did not bring bad grades in my mama's house back then. They would make you go get your own switch.
Yeah, that's right.
And things of that nature. So I had a really wonderful life. I was at Fayetteville State University for about 3 years. And I was a president of the math club.
Okay.
So people like myself, we are gifted. We didn't raise our hand when we was in the third or fourth grade and says, I want to be in active addiction and homeless on the streets of Charlotte. But through a series of possible poor decision making, circumstances out of our control, most people that I know, a lot of people that I know, they may be one paycheck away from homelessness. Mm. That's or right. one bad decision of getting active addiction. And addiction is a disease. We can talk about that at another time. I did experiment with some friends and, you know, those Kiki and Bobo Nim, those colleagues that we call and everything.
Yeah.
Everybody else was doing it. I didn't want to be like the odd man out, you know. I wanted to be hip, slick, and cool like all my peers and stuff. So I experiment with crack cocaine. And there are people like myself who have genes genetically that's going to, it takes over their body. The drug, a very short period of time, I was in active addiction. I had a home. I had that 66 Mustang. I was Air Force, and I just rotated back to the States. Had that 18-piece stereo set. I had everything. Bought me a home. Had the Doberman out in the yard.
Right.
Once that addiction took over, I smoked up all of that.
Wow.
As much as we have, everything I own can fit on the end of a crack pipe.
Mm.
And I didn't have the training or the tools or the skills to understand the addiction. And so for 21 years, yes, I spiraled out of control. I saw a lot of my friends getting 10, 12, 15-year bids in jail. Some of them didn't make it out. Some people lost their lives. And it was just tragic. And my retirement plan at that time was jails, institutions, and death.
Wow. So you made it out.
I did.
How many times were you incarcerated?
I think it was 3. It may have been more. I can't remember all of them. Okay. But, you know, incarceration, a lot of people look at that as a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
By me being detained really interrupted my active addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked to my advantage. And also, my family, as I stated, I didn't grow up in a dysfunctional family. And it was good because when I was incarcerated, two things happened. My family knew that I was still alive,
mm-hmm.
and they knew where I was.
Yeah.
In active addiction, they didn't know if I was somewhere in a ditch, overdose, drug deal gone bad, established, the things that go along with active addiction. But when I was got detained, there was still hope.
Yes. They say sometimes God uses prison to purify his servants. Yeah. Not right. to crush them, but what the enemy means for evil, God means for good. Now you're out helping your people
right.
overcome this terrible, like you say, it's a disease, right?
It is a disease.
Now, a lot of people don't refer to drug use or addiction as a disease. Tell me about that.
That is a stigma that a lot of people still have today because they'll look at the situation. They say, well, you went and bought that alcohol. You went and bought that heroin, you went and bought that cocaine. And they're right at that point. But the disease portion of it, it's been found, I think it was the year was 1969. I've done my research on this, that it's actually a disease. Once a mood-altering substance get inside people like myself who have that gene that and it works on the dopamine. I could go that deep with it. It replaces what your body normally would generate so that you can feel the elation, joy, or fear, or happiness and all that. That mood-altering substance, whatever it is, it replaces that in your mind. And as long as it's there, it's driving the bus in your life.
Mm.
It's going to take you places that you don't want to go.
Wow.
And I winded up in abandoned houses, broken down cars, and then when the police would finally catch up with me, yes, I was incarcerated. And it wasn't until I learned more about the disease of addiction and that there are some solutions to my active addiction, and it's called recovery. And that's where I try to stay between those lines and to share my experience, strength, and help with anybody that's standing in front of me.
So what is the difference between some of the brothers that you see walking up and down the street, you know, in our city with backpacks on, mm-hmm. and they're just wandering all day? Is it that they haven't made a decision to help themselves? But like I know that the only way somebody can get healed from that is that they have to want to do it, and you can't make somebody do anything they don't really want to do.
The first part of your question is, what's the difference in me and them? There's absolutely no difference.
Okay.
They're not. I am them, and they are me. I actually go into the detention center downtown here in Charlotte, a system called a reentry program, and I share with them so that they can make wiser decisions, so they can make more well decisions, so they can move forward in their lives. Because I am no different from them, other than I found this thing called recovery that I spoke about earlier. So, yes, we are the same. You also said something about personal responsibility. People like us can be beaten, threatened, prayed over, detained, sprinkled, baptized, but until we decide to do something about our situation and have a recovery-oriented community that accepts that. A lot of times we think that it's the family, that is true. There are some individuals out there that the family is not as educated. They still shame and blame and things like that. But part of my journey is to educate not only the families, the stakeholders and providers, but everybody in the community that people like us can be just as productive in the community as anyone else. But we need that support and that education piece.
You ever relapse during your recovery time?
Well, let's put it like this. I thought I had gotten into recovery about 4 or 5 times. Mm-hmm. Every time I run out of money or every time I go to jail, I'd say I'm not going to ever do that again.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that money. I'm going to pay my child support. I'm going to pay my rent. I'm going to get me an apartment. But I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the education. I came back out with the same information and skill set that I went in. And I would try that self-will and say, I'm not going to do it. But I would go back into that same environment, and I wasn't prepared. So I did return to use is the term that we use on several times. On March 15th, 2010, I completely surrendered.
Mm.
Completely. I remember talking to the fireman and the police officer. I says, I don't care if you lock me up. I'm not going back underneath that bridge. I'm not living like this anymore. But even at that time, I wasn't where I am today. I had to get educated. There are people who believed in me, even such as my wife, and loved on me when I wasn't very lovable. I started to find out what was really going on with me. When I get angry, when I get a lump or sum of money, when I get that guilt and that shame of all those years and not being in people and family lives, mm-hmm. I would normally turn to a drink or a drug.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to find other tools to change that.
Wow. I love the way you use the word surrender. That's my favorite word.
I had to give up completely.
Yeah, because we surrender is like, you know, like you put your hands up, like when an officer come and tell you, put your hands up, mm-hmm. show me your hands are clean. And when we surrender, that is the beginning of the transformation of our life.
It is.
So, Dorothy, how long y'all been married?
Going on 3 years.
Going on 3 years. Were you ever worried that, you know, Ron may, you know, flip the script on you and go back?
Actually, I don't. One thing, first of all, he's a man of God. And And I just believe and trust that God hadn't brought him this far to leave him. And I believe in his recovery.
Yes.
And that's why I'm always there at every event that I can be there to support.
Right.
Because I've seen firsthand what someone who goes through recovery, what they have to go through. And to overcome the obstacles that my husband has had to overcome and to see how he battles, things come up now and it could really trigger him, but how he uses those tools daily to get through that process. And one of the main tools is he prays. He's a believer and he reads his word.
Yes.
And there are times when I, as a wife, want to fix it, but I know I have to back off and let God do his
Go ahead. Things. So what does it mean, Ron, to have that type of support from your wife? Man, that's got to mean the world to you and gives you more confidence in what you're doing. You know, just makes you feel like, wow, I have somebody that cares about me other than, you know, the Lord.
Absolutely. That is very powerful. What you said, I just as they say in the entertainment world, just drop the mic. You're absolutely right. To have that unconditional love, to have that unconditional support means a whole lot. There's a lot of questions I'll ask myself, and none of those answers are use dope or use drugs. I can ask myself something like this, and I do it sometimes. Smoke dope and do what?
Right, yeah.
My relationship is destroyed. My career is destroyed. I'm not going to be as trustworthy in the community. Smoke dope. If the answer to the question, if the answer is use a mood altering substance, whether it's drugs or alcohol, if that's the answer,
yeah.
I challenge myself as to what is the question.
Yeah, yeah.
No, there's no question you can ask me this, that. But the statement you made about the unconditional love and support that I get from my wife is unparalleled. It's invaluable.
Wow. What do your children say about you?
They're happy. Please. That was a struggle because for those 21 years, I wasn't in their lives. No high school, no first date, no prom, no graduations, no Christmas or anything. And so there was a learning curve for everybody. And just because I knew that I had changed my life and got into recovery, there was no evidence of that. So it took some time. It took some me getting years away from the last time I used to build that trust and that confidence. Today, I have access to all of my kids. I pray for patience. God gave me 7 grandkids from those 3 kids that I have.
Okay, wow.
And spending a lot of time with them helps me in my recovery. But family, having a supportive family, starting with my wife, is just, it is. It's just great. It's just great.
I met a brother that he has a drinking problem, right? Mm-hmm. But he's functional because he knows his responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I was so happy he called me last night and said, he said, Brother BJ, you know, I'm working about 40 hours a week. Mm-hmm. So I almost worked 60 hours last week. I said, that's good, man. But they're looking for somewhere to stay, right?
Mm-hmm.
All across the country, rent is like
$2,000. Right.
It's virtually impossible for him to have what they require, what you got to have 3 times, you know, the salary, whatever.
Right.
How do we help people with housing?
We're doing a lot in the city of Charlotte. I mean, okay. We are really doing a lot.
That's awesome.
Please Google what we're doing at Roof Above.
Okay.
Anybody who's out there listening, check it out. We have some supportive housing. A lot of times you see all of these, especially in this city, you see apartments going up, and before they even get through putting in the last nail in construction, they'll fill.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. The going price is probably anywhere from $1,300 to $1,500 or $1,800 for a 1-bedroom. Mm-hmm. And somebody who's just getting trying to get on their feet, there is no affordable housing there. Through Roof Above, we've purchased a place over on, it's just called Hilltop.
Mm-hmm.
There's some room carved out for individuals like that. The county has a lot of supportive housings. Sometimes you may have to transition from a shelter to some of the hotels. We have like 2 or 3 hotels
mm-hmm.
already. Now they're like 70 to 80 bed hotels, but they're strictly for people like the individual that you name.
Yeah.
And so they can transition. I started out in one of those. If there's a veteran out there, there's a program called HUD-VASH. It was started by, President Obama, it's called Zero Homeless Vets.
Mm-hmm.
where they were placed. They were like in my case, I stayed in a gated community. They gave me a voucher to stay in a gated community with a swimming pool and all of these things. They would help either pay all of your rent to include utilities and things, but that's not just unique to the veteran population. There's a lot of organizations out there, some of those Shelter Plus Care and some of those things. Mm-hmm. The problem even with that, though, is that these vouchers are not at $1,300 or $1,500, and there are a lot of landlords that don't want to touch that because they figure they can make more.
Yeah.
We're working with that. We have a couple of boards that I'm on and committees. So if there's any of you landlords out there, please understand that we're people. And giving us a second, a chance in life, we can be just as productive as anyone else. We pay taxes. We vote. We're in the grocery stores instead of clogging up the emergency rooms. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out different ways to stay in recovery and fulfill some of our dreams.
What do you think is going to happen in America, and not only in Charlotte, in the next 3 to 5 years as we see inflation going through the roof, gas prices, and then that, you know, we just got to talking about the housing situation.
Right.
So will there be less opportunity or more opportunity to help people recover from addiction and also get on their feet financially, you know, with their families?
I see the sky's the limit. I see more opportunities. I am not that unique when it comes to this body of work. I am one of many. I'm one of the sheep. There's a lot of people who are seeing that they can get into recovery and not only help themselves, but give back what was so freely given to them. I spoke something about peer support. Mm-hmm. Peer support, you do need a high school education or GED equivalent.
Okay.
You don't need a associate's, bachelor's, master's, or PhD. You don't need all those alphabets behind your name. Peer support is a program where you take a series of classes. It's only 70 hours, 50 of which of those classes is a concentrated peer support class that I teach, and we're teaching it all over the state. Mm-hmm. But there's several facilitators here in the city of Charlotte. Then you take 20 other hours of mental health. With that certificate of 70 hours, you can get employed even if you have a judicial background. Mm. As long as you've been in recovery for a period of 365 days or 1 year, you can have felonies. You can have, because if you've been in active addiction, chances are you've had some run-in with the law.
Yeah.
But that doesn't disqualify you from getting paid by the state in peer support services. I think we have somewhere like 5,000 throughout the state right now.
Okay.
But it's people who have had some wreckage in their past, who've decided to change, and they can get paid for it. Right now, the going rate, I think, is between $15 and $22 per hour throughout the state. People like in the treatment facilities are hiring them. They're in emergency rooms or Atrium, and Novant has some. All of the people like Monarch, Daymark, treatment, or McLeod, they have peer support specialists. There are people with substance use disorder, that's a new addictive language. Uh-huh. Someone who's been addicted to mood-altering substance who got into recovery, and they use that to guide other people toward a manageable life.
Some of the basic things that you need when you're coming off the street, like, you know, Social Security card, ID. Mm-hmm. Do we have something in place that people don't have to, you know, play ring around the rosy to try to get, you know, an ID and, you know, is that...
We do, okay. And that goes back to Roof Above. That's 945 College Street. They will help you get your birth certificate. You're going to need certain things before you can even get a state ID. I think it's Social Security card and birth certificates. There's certain days where they'll take the individual to those places to get those two items, and then you can get your state ID. And if you have a valid driver's license, they can get that as well at no cost to the individual.
So, okay, so like I got a brother that he don't have anything.
Right.
And he's been told that he has some money waiting on him as a, I think he has, what do you call that? When you get a monthly check.
SSI or something.
Disability, I think.
Disability, yeah. Yes. Okay. He may have Medicaid as well. Go ahead.
Yeah. And he doesn't have his birth certificate. He doesn't have a relationship with his family. He lives on the street.
Mm-hmm. So they can get that. They can get that there. They can guide the process at no cost to him. Now, time-wise, I don't know, with COVID, CDC and everything, it may take an extra week or so, but I know in a 30-day period he should be able to get proper ID. He's got to prove who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And Social Security number, which is unique to the individual throughout their lives, and the birth certificate, which they will help them get that.
Okay.
At no cost. And then they can get a state ID,
okay,
which is a picture ID that's saying, you are who this is who you are.
Right, right, right.
And again, if they qualify for driver's license, they can get that replaced too. But once they get that, then they can, if it's something with Department of Social Services, mm-hmm, they can help connect the dots as far as he's due some money or something like that. That's a matter there. Okay. Also, uh-huh, there's a place on Elizabeth Street down by, I think that's Atrium at the end of the street. Trade turns into, right on the other side of CPCC. It's called, it's Free Legal Services of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pro bono service too. It comes at a really good price. It's free. Uh-huh. And they can help guide that process and get involved and help advocate for the individual.
That's awesome. So what's the future for you guys? As a married couple that's in this industry, helping people, what are some of the things that you'd like to see?
Well, first of all, is to get RAP out in the community and, of course, throughout the state, as he and I, as husband and wife, facilitating those courses.
Awesome.
We have our LLC.
Okay, good, good, good.
We're looking at doing some things. Yeah. I just recently... on board with a great organization called Camino Services, mm-hmm, Camino Health Center,
okay,
which I am the manager of community services with them. I'm building up my staff. We opened up an office. We are at 123 Stetson Drive now.
Okay.
We opened up an office in Concord a couple of months ago. We'll be opening up something in Greensboro. So we're rolling that out. We maybe even go, we have some opportunities in South Carolina.
Okay.
But we really want to take over the state. So right now our plate is really full with what we're doing at hand. But we do have a vision.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we are obligated to our prospective employers.
Right.
But that doesn't stop us from doing what we do.
That's right.
As
you guys have a ministry. So tell me about the ministry, Sister Dorothy. What are you?
Ordained Reverend.
Okay, go ahead.
And been ordained since 99.
Wow.
But been called years before the end.
Okay.
Didn't accept the call until 99. And wherever I'm called, I go, mm-hmm, and I speak. This past Sunday, it was a Zoom call with Bethany Missionary Baptist Church.
Okay.
But I've been all over Charlotte preaching and outside.
Wow.
Yeah, outside the state.
That's awesome.
My goal is to encourage individuals that there is hope.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any situations dead. So God had called me to speak life into dead situations.
Wow. Issues. And speaking of that, you know, give me something, Brother Ron, about scripture says, though he was dead, yet shall you live again. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So when you was out there and where you are now, it's a song that I really love by Anthony Brown called Testimony. Uh-huh. It said, "Never, God can turn the tables, never stop believing." Did you ever stop believing that you could one day recover and be who you are today?
Yes. And that kept me in that situation for a number of years. Yes, I had little or no hope. There was long stretches of time where I had no hope at all. And but as you stated, with that power greater than myself, and that power being God, he had different plans for me. He knew while I was in the midst of all of that, he had this plan right here, his perfect plan. But yes, there were times where I had given up hope. I figured that I was going to die like that. I was going to die in my active addiction. I had accepted my faith.
Wow.
That was, I thought that I was my faith. But yeah, God, through his son, Jesus Christ, put me back on that pottery reel and molded me into the person that I feel that I am today. All I'm doing today is those 10 things that they told me years ago when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, the don't steal, don't rob, put God, for, you know, all of those things. Yeah. That's all I do on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was a long periods of time where my mind had accepted that lie that I'm not going to amount to anything. Wow. I'm not going to do all these things. And then when I got into recovery, God said, yes, you can. Mm-hmm. Get out the kiddie pool, jump out on the deep end, and I got you. And so I don't have any fears anymore. I don't live a life that brings any harm to anybody else. My goal is to be the example that people can change. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, that hope, there is hope after the dope.
Yeah,
that hope is God.
Go ahead. So, man, that's a beautiful testimony that you laid out for us. I'm just so proud that you are transparent and telling the people, you know, what it's going to take. It's like, you know, if it was easy, everybody would do it. But, you know, it's the uphill road that you decided to climb, and look where you are today. I mean, you know, how many jobs you got now? How many jobs you got? You got about four or five jobs.
I'm doing a few things, but at the end of the day, my primary purpose is to use my experience, strength, and hope to help somebody not named Ron Clark.
That's awesome, man. So do you have contact information? How can they get in contact with you?
Yes, you can contact me at ronald@camino.org.
Okay.
If you just, and you can Google us. At Camino Help Center, I'm the manager of community services. We have a couple of departments that I'm connected with there, with the behavioral health department. And also we have this thing called Camino University where I facilitate a lot of trainings and stuff like that. But yeah, it's very simple, ronald@camino.org.
How do you spell Camino? There's this.
It's C-A-M-I-N-O.
Okay, it's very simple. Okay, very good. All right. Well, man, look, I'm glad we had this conversation. You know what I'm saying?
It's our pleasure.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's an honor to hear your fantastic story. It gives all of us hope that, you know, never stop believing. We can make it if we never give up. Don't give up on yourself. That's awesome. Ron Clark, thank you so much. And Dorothy, his lovely wife, thank you for being here as well.
The 20-Minute Morning Show is a podcast production of BJ Murphy Media and UIN, Urban Internet News. The show is written and produced by BJ Murphy and executive producers Saber Robinson and Alexandria Davis. From our studios in Charlotte, North Carolina, our contributors are Sean, Sunday, AK, and Brooklyn Alexander. Check out more episodes on our website at 20minuteshow.com.